Thank you for joining us. This is A Moment in Time, a podcast story series, and I'm Kevin Niehaus, your host.
And this is another Moment in Time. This is Kevin Niehaus, and I'm here with my guest,
Amanda.
And Amanda, kind of frame for us what the moment in time you're going to share with us this evening.
I did a surrogacy last year, and I want to share that with everyone and tell them my experience and maybe and hopefully encourage other women to do this if they're able to.
Oh, that's beautiful. So kind of set the stage for us. When did you start thinking about, you know, possibly becoming a surrogate, and what did that process even, you know, bringing that idea to life? What was that like?
So it was something I'd wanted to do for a long time. So I started doing more and more research on it. And then there's a local radio station here in Texas that I listen to. And the DJ's wife happened to be a surrogate, and he would talk about it a whole lot. And I was like, you know, I just need to do it. So I started doing more and more research on it and what I needed to do. Finally went to a website after doing research on different agencies, and I picked one that I liked. The reason I picked the agency that I picked was because pretty much everybody there who you would work with had been a surrogate. So it was perfect for me. And then I filled out a questionnaire, sent it to them. And then a few days later, I got another more in-depth questionnaire back. And I filled that one out. And then somebody called me. We did a phone interview. And then after that, they sent one of their agents to the house to, you know, interview me in person and kind of walk through a few more of the steps. And after I passed that interview, I had to go see a psychologist to make sure I was mentally sound to do this and not crazy. Although my psychologist, she did tell me she thought I was crazy, but I could go ahead and do it. And then after that, after they got all the results back, they put my profile live on the agency I was with. So, and that was about a 3-month span that took to do everything.
Just kind of like a basic screen, right, just to make sure that you're healthy, that you're not dealing with any mental or psychological issues, and that you'd be a good actual candidate for surrogacy?
Correct. Yes, exactly. And, I mean, I had to go to doctor's appointments and mostly my OBGYN to get those type of records for them and to say, yes, I'm still healthy, because I hadn't had a child in about 14 years at that point. I had to make sure that everything was still working right. And he said I was a great candidate and wrote a letter and everything. And we sent in all those records as well.
Oh, that's awesome. So once they kind of posted your profile, as somebody who's kind of exploring surrogacy myself, it's kind of like match dating, if you will. What was that like, kind of being the person, you know, hoping that someone would pick you up or someone would want you to carry their child?
So it's more of like finding a good match. I was matched twice, and the first person I was matched with was not a good match for me, and I ended up having to walk away. It was somebody who was very domineering, wanted me to go to certain doctors, he wanted me to go see his doctor, and they were from overseas as well. So I understand that they wanted things in their way, but I wasn't a good match for them. So I ended up walking away from that match. The second match I had was with this couple who is local in Texas, and we just kind of hit it off from the start. The way the interview starts is, you know, you get their profile. After they look at your profile and decide, yes, they choose you. They want to do a interview with you or a Skype with you. And we were able to Skype, which was great, because then we got to see each other and really see facial expressions and everything, and we were able to talk to each other and go over stuff that we both may have had concerns about. And they were just a great match for me from the start. So then after we decided, you know, we wanted to work with each other, we first had to, you know, take 2 or 3 days and then decide. Because you don't decide right then and there. And they, because the agency wants you to think about it, you know, and everything that happened, and take a few days and then you decide. And we both had decided pretty much immediately that we wanted to work with each other. We both had called the agency the next day and said, yes, I definitely want to work with these people. And just from that moment, they were my people to work with, and they were fantastic.
That's very cool. So
yeah.
Compared to the two different couples that you were matched with, because it sounds like one was the worst experience and the other one was a much, you know, more pleasant experience, what were some kind of criteria that you were looking for as somebody who would, you know, go through this journey with another couple?
Somebody whom I was looking for was kind of going to be laid back like me, not too controlling, kind of let me do my own thing, but keep them in the loop with what was going on with their baby. And couple A was not like that at all. They wanted me to go see certain doctors. They wanted me to go see their specific doctor. They didn't want to use my doctor. And I was very comfortable with my doctor. I've obviously been going to him for a while. Couple A had even called my lawyer, because we all have to have lawyers and there's paperwork and everything, had called my lawyer to try to have him talk him into changing the paperwork to talk me into doing something else. And when I found that out, that was kind of like the last straw with them, and I just walked away. I couldn't work with them anymore. Couple B was just amazing from the start. They were very easy to work with, very easy to talk to. I never felt there wasn't anything I could ask and be open with them about and talk to them about.
That's kind of nice.
And they were more my age. They were more laid back. So couple A or B was perfect for me.
So once you were matched, once you both called the agency and you said, okay, it's a go, we're good. What happened next for you?
So next I had to fly out to where their fertility doctor was, and their fertility doctor checked me, made sure everything was working right, even though we had all the papers from my doctor. Their doctor still needed to check because he would be doing the procedure to put the embryo in my uterus. So I flew out there, he checked everything, he's like, perfect, she's great, this is going to be fine, this is going to be great. And so we passed there. So after he gave me the thumbs up and the green light to go, after that, his office, the fertility office, would come up with a schedule of when I would start birth control. So you first have to take birth control for like 4 weeks or so. And then after the birth control, while you're taking birth control, you're also taking other meds and giving yourself shots. So I was giving myself shots in the tummy, and it was to kind of help stimulate the ovaries and start to trick the body into thinking it was pregnant. So about a month after that.
So what's the purpose of the birth control, if you don't mind my asking?
It's to regulate your period, to make sure you get on track with your period, so that they can really see the days when everything is going on.
Okay, so I guess it sounds like getting a track record or really an understanding of kind of how your body operates during the menstrual cycle.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. That's what I said. I'm like, you guys are trying to get me pregnant, you're putting me on birth control. The doctor's like, I know it sounds weird, but yes, this is what we're doing. So yeah, so you're on that for about a month while you're also stimulating your ovaries and getting things together. So after that was done, then things really started happening. There was the birth control, there's a bunch of pills you have to take. The shot in the tummy is really not that bad. It's not. It's the shot that's kind of in the rear end that hurts, and that's the progesterone, and it's the big, thick stuff that your body starts to think, oh, we're pregnant, because that's when a woman's pregnant, that's what her body produces, is progesterone. So, yeah, that shot wasn't so much fun. It wasn't unbearable or anything. It was just uncomfortable. So then we started doing that one, and there's other pills you take, of course, along with that. And we had to do all that for about 6 weeks. And then after the 6 weeks, you go back to the doctor, to their fertility doctor, and if everything's looking okay, we put the embryo where it belongs and keep our fingers crossed that I stay pregnant. And we did stay pregnant. We got the first confirmed fetal heartbeat about 6 days after, and then we did it again 2 weeks after, and we still had a fetal heartbeat. So we were pregnant, and I kept going to the doctor that I was going to, who was monitoring for the other doctor, if that makes sense. There's a doctor near my house that I had to go to that monitored for their doctor where they lived and would send the records and everything over of what was going on.
So now is this a third doctor now? Uh-huh. So you've got your doctor, their doctor, and this kind of, we're going to call it liaison doctor.
Right, correct. So there were three doctors I was going to, correct, yes. Because they had to have a fertility doctor here who was monitoring my blood work, making sure I was pregnant, making sure my hormones were where they needed to be, all in between, going to my doctor and the fertility doctor where they lived. So there had to be a fertility doctor near me to monitor all that. So yeah, there was at one point we were going to three doctors at one time.
It's just so fascinating.
And it was okay. It this whole science behind it is crazy. I'm so surprised that it even works like it does. It's amazing. So once we had the second confirmed fetal heartbeat, I was released to my OB completely, and that's the only person I've seen after the second fetal heartbeat. So I would go to him like you would with a normal pregnancy, once a month for, 7 weeks, and then every 2 weeks, the last eight, and then every week in the ninth month. And then we had a baby. So in between the whole time, I was talking to the mom two or three times a week because they were so excited. She had gone through IFB 5 times and was unfortunately never able to get pregnant. And so I was talking to her constantly and telling her, and they came to a lot of the doctor's appointments, and they got to find out that what the sex of the baby was through, like, what a normal pregnancy, as normal as it could have been for them. And we just kept in touch really close. I would call and tell her what all the dates were, what was going on, and everything. And then we had a baby.
So did they fly out to you? Or how did that kind of work out? Because you had to fly out to their fertility doctor. Did they just come once a month with you and fly out, or what was that like?
So they don't live that far from where I live. They're about 4 hours away from where I live in Texas. So they're in one part of Texas, I'm in another. We're about four hours apart. And so they were able just to drive up for the appointments. I would tell them the time. And I always scheduled them like the last appointment of the day at my doctor so that they had plenty of time to get here. And they just made the appointments when they could. They came for mostly the important ones, like the ultrasound and the heartbeat ones, and where the doctor would take the pictures and those things. So they came for a lot of those ones.
So the big milestones. But like the normal ones.
For the big moments, yeah, the big milestones in the pregnancy, yes.
And then just normal non-milestone ones, you would just kind of give an update?
Of course, yeah, I would give them an update. And I'm at my doctor's office, I can put, other people can call and see what my records are. So I had put her that if there was something she needed to talk to the doctor about the baby and the pregnancy and what was going on, that they had the option to do that. So the office knew that they could give this couple the information about me and the baby regarding the pregnancy. So if there was something I couldn't explain, she was able to call the office and talk to them, just like she would have been pregnant.
You have the baby. What happens mm-hmm. after you have the baby?
I'm off for work for a little bit, and I go right back to work, like two or three weeks later. We keep in touch. I still definitely talk to her. She still sends me pictures. I actually got some pictures, or I got a video last night. She sent me a video, and the baby is getting ready to crawl. He's rocking right now. So we definitely still keep in touch. She doesn't have to. I just think that we got closer than either of us thought we were. I wasn't expecting to have a relationship with these people after it was all said and done, and I do. And we talk once or twice a month still. She sends me random pictures and those kind of things. So, yeah, so, I think...
So if they were going to have another baby, you know, would you be willing to be their surrogate again, or...
They are going to have another baby, and they are going to have to use a surrogate, and I am willing to do it for them. The only thing is I'm getting a little older, so you can only do this until you're like 40 or 41. I'm 37 right now, so I'm going to do it a second time for somebody. It's probably, unfortunately, not going to be them, but there's a limited amount of time before I can't do it anymore. I am going to do it again. Definitely would do it for them. They would definitely be my number one choice. But they want to spend another year or two with their baby before they have another one, which is understandable.
So looking back on kind of your life, what was the driving factor? Because when we had originally talked about this, you had mentioned that surrogacy was something that you've thought about for a long time. It's not something that just kind of came to you. You know, what were the defining factors for you that drove you towards surrogacy?
I was in a good place. My family is in a good place. And it was just time for me. It was just a good time to go ahead and do it, to go ahead and just jump in head first and do it. And I'm still in a good place, and my family is still in a good place.
That's really awesome. Kind of what was your support system during all of this?
So, of course, my family is here. My dad and stepmom are here. So they were very supportive, and it was kind of weird for them for me to be pregnant, and they weren't going to have, like, a baby to hang out with. And I'm like, you guys have had two. We're good. You had two. We don't need any more. They're teenagers. And then my sister was here, and, you know, you get the normal aches and pains. But for the most part, I did have a good pregnancy. But my sister's like, I don't know if I want kids. Are you going to carry mine? I'm like, no. You are capable of carrying children. You can have your own kids. And then once a month, I did have to call into a hotline with the agency and talk with other surrogates to see what they were going through and talk about any issues or things that, you know, to see if they were dealing with things that I was dealing with. And we were able just to kind of talk through it and support one another and answer questions for one another because we were all in different stages. Some people were just starting, you know, their IFB. Other people were done, had the baby, and were calling in for the last time. So there was a real wide range of what everybody was doing.
That's really
neat. It was usually about 10. Yeah, there was usually about 10 to 13 girls who were calling in. It was about an hour-long conversation. We would have longer if we needed. But yeah. And then, of course, I had my friends and my neighbors and people around to help out.
So now you're a mother of two, right? And like you said, it's been a while. How is it different from, you know, being pregnant with your own children and being pregnant with such a big, you know, age difference between your youngest son and this baby?
There was really no difference in pregnancy. The pregnancy was pretty much the same. The only difference was I didn't get to have them the fun way. There were needles and injections, right? But the pregnancies really weren't different. They were pretty much the same. I had the normal morning sickness, the back pains, the aches, the pains, the hot all the time. There was one point when my kids were like, Mom, we need you to, like, turn the heat up a little bit. We're freezing. I was like, put clothes on. I'm hot. The only difference was that I wasn't bringing a baby home this time. Somebody else was. And it was all them. Like, it was their embryo. I guess the way to describe it is their bun, my oven.
Mm-hmm.
So, but no, there really wasn't too much of a difference in pregnancy at all, other than I wasn't bringing a baby home this time.
And how
which
was
that? Fine. I never wanted any more children of my own. I don't want any more children of my own. I have teenagers, so I'm good.
But what is, I mean, because, you know, the intention is I don't necessarily want to bring the baby home, but emotionally you become, you know, bonded, or what they say is you become bonded with this child. So emotionally, what was that like, kind of being there the whole time in the process and then not bringing the baby home?
Right. So I never was bonded to this baby. He was never going to be mine. He was never meant for me. He was meant for somebody else. So I was never attached to him. I never was emotional about him not coming home. I think I did go through a part of 2 to 3 weeks where I did have postpartum, which I don't remember having with the kids. I could have, but I was just really sad and weepy. And this happened about a month to 2 months after I had him, and I was just really sad and weepy, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And then it just kind of like went away. But other than maybe a postpartum depression, and I'm not even sure if I had it, I didn't even go and see anybody. Nothing was really different for me.
That's really cool. So it's kind of like you set yourself up mentally going into it. Now, was that also like maybe some topics of conversations that you all would have on these group chats to make sure you don't bond with the baby?
Right, yeah. I mean, nobody really, we all knew that these babies weren't going to be ours. So that was never an issue. And everybody has gone through a very intense test, we'll say, to make sure that you're mentally and stable to do this. So that was, I don't think that was really ever anybody's concern. And there's so much paperwork and there's a bunch of lawyers involved and you sign so many things. So there's no way that you could bring this baby home, even if you wanted to, which I did not want to at all. So there was never any worry about any of that.
Which it's interesting because, you know, as somebody who's exploring surrogacy as a way of having children, you know, that's actually the first thing that they warn you about, right, is actually the opposite idea that you need to make sure you have a lawyer because there is a chance that the mother can take the baby home and decide that that's her baby. So it's interesting to hear.
You're right.
You know, it's interesting to hear, you know, the communication from your end, right, where you got the message that there's, that's not anything to be fearful of. And that's why I was really excited to, you know, that you were willing to share this, you know, moment in your life, because it is something that many people explore. And that's scary, you know, to think about the cost of surrogacy and think like, oh my God, what if this woman takes my baby? Like, what do I do?
Right. No, he was never mine. It was their embryo. He is totally theirs. That he is genetically theirs. I just carried him. And I do understand that people are afraid of that. And I would, to try to help her, I always would be like, are you ready to be a mommy? Your baby's coming. It's almost time. And even on Mother's Day, I sent them a card saying, next year, it's going to be Happy Mother's Day for you. Because this was like a year-long, almost 2-year-long process that we did. It was a very long process. And it was even longer for them because she had to go through other stuff to get the eggs and make him into an embryo. So, yeah.
So it sounds like it's really, really important to make sure you have a good match, you know, for your instance, a good match with parents, and from our standpoint, a good match with a surrogate, solely so it's not something, it sounds like a true partnership.
Yeah, it was. It was a true partnership, and there were definitely times when I couldn't get a hold of people, and the mom would have to call and get a hold of them and be like, you need to call her now. Mm-hmm. And there were times when she would call me and be like, I can't get a hold of them, and I would call, and yeah, it was definitely a partnership and a lot of communication and everything going on.
So was there, looking back on the experience, it sounds like it was pretty pleasurable for you. Was there anything that looking back you would change or you would be cautious for the second time around?
No, there's really not. Everything, I wouldn't change anything in the way that it worked with the second couple. I wouldn't change anything at all with how it worked with them. Not even, no.
That's wonderful.
There's not. I just wish they could have been at more of the doctor's appointments because I know that they wanted to be at more of them, but there's a 4-hour difference, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's hard to get off of work. And I understood that, but I do wish they could have been at more of the doctor's appointments. But I always called, or she always called me, sometimes before the doctor's appointment was over, to see what happened and what was going on. Yeah, I wish that they would have been able to realize that this was happening, you know, into the second trimester, but it wasn't until the third trimester, you know, almost towards the end of it, when she's like, I'm finally starting to feel like this is happening, and yeah. It almost made me cry, because I'm like, oh my gosh, she didn't think this was going to happen, and she's like, we're going to go baby shopping for the furniture and everything this weekend, so I wish she could have felt like that the whole time, but I understand that they had so much heartbreak in the beginning when they first started. Too.
So what was it like kind of having the baby and then passing the baby off to this mother and realizing for this couple, it's officially real now, like after all the attempts that they've had, they failed, you got to be the one to carry the baby for them.
If you could have seen how happy they were, if anybody could see how happy you made somebody by doing something really amazing for them, that was all worth it right there. Like, they were just so happy and so grateful, and just to make somebody that happy and help make their lives better made me feel good.
That's really neat. So what was your favorite experience through this whole, like, journey? What was your favorite part?
My favorite part of the whole experience? Wow. Getting to see them together and now getting to see all the pictures and them growing their family is pretty awesome. Yeah. Probably in the second trimester was okay. You know, that's when I finally wasn't so sick anymore. But definitely seeing them growing as a family was probably my favorite part, and getting to see their pictures and everything.
And what was the scariest part of the whole journey?
The scariest part of the whole journey was that I passed a kidney stone while I was pregnant, and it was horrible. That was the scariest part, having to be in the hospital for 5 days while passing a kidney stone. Okay. That was the scariest part.
So was there,
for me and them, because, go ahead.
Was there ever a part in this journey where you were worried you were going to let them down, or you were scared that the pregnancy might not be fruitful?
Of course, you're always worried that it's not going to take, because there's a chance that it won't take. So of course, you're always afraid of that. And we actually had to do 2 transfers because the first one for me didn't take, and we had a miscarriage after 7 weeks. And I felt so horrible about that. That was probably one of the worst things I've ever experienced, because I felt like a failure myself. And I felt like I did let them down when that happened. And, you know, I talked to the group about it, and they're like, it's not your fault. They typically don't take the first time. And I was like, I know, but you just don't understand. And they're like, no, we do, because we don't feel this way about our ITs, intended parents. So yeah, we all got over it. And it was funny, because they were calling and checking on me, and I was calling and checking on them. Yeah, I'm like, are you guys okay? And they're like, yeah, we're fine. Are you okay? And I'm like, I'm okay. So yeah, we had to. And then the second time it took, and it was perfect.
That's really neat. So now let's talk about multiples versus singles, right? Because that's, you know, because when you look it up, you've got kind of 2 different sets of statistics, multiples and singles. So when you signed up, were you open to multiples, or were you only open to single pregnancy?
I was open to twins, to doubles, but not triplets. Some people want to do triplets, and I was like, no, we're not going to do any more than 2 eggs at a time, because when you start getting 3 babies and more, then they start having issues. So I said I would do twins, but I don't want to do triplets. I said I'd do singles or twins, and that was it. That's where I drew the line, kind of in the sand. And the parents were like, no, we only want to do 1 egg at a time. We don't want to do even try twins. They're like, of course, if the egg splits and you end up with twins, awesome, we're all for that. And we had talked about in our interview, I'm like, look, if for some reason an egg would split 3 times, I know we're only doing one, I would want to terminate one of them and not do three. And they totally agreed with me. We were on the same page with that because baby, you know, this is already a very delicate process. And to add three instead of two or one, is there's just such a much higher risk for so many problems to go on. So, yeah, I was open to twins.
Yeah, because it's really interesting looking up, you know, the different agencies and the different trying to find the surrogacies, and someone like myself, we'd also have to find like an egg donor, which now you add a new variable. What's some advice that you would give to somebody who's going or even thinking about this process?
Do research on the agencies you want to go with. Definitely write down questions before you go into the interview with your intended parents. And don't be afraid to ask questions. One of the questions I asked my parents were, if something happens to you, do you have somebody else who can take this baby? And they said, yes, her sister would. I was like, okay, because I don't want another child. I have two. I'm very happy with them. And they said, yes, it's actually in our part of the contract that if something happens to us while you're pregnant, my sister will take the baby. I'm like, okay, good. Because I didn't want to have a baby and them to end up in the system.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the intention. I wanted to make sure that they were going to be taken care of. So, and actually the agency that I went through is out in California by you in Irvine. I mean, it's a couple hours away, but it's in Irvine.
So it sounds like, you know, it's really, really important and that you're a proponent of making sure that you ask honest questions and that you stand firm to your own beliefs and your own boundaries, because, you know, it's not a true partnership if you're fearful or things go unasked or answered.
Right, yeah, you definitely have to hold your ground, and you definitely have to tell them, this is what I'm willing to do, this is not what I'm willing to do. If that's not going to work for you, then I'm not going to be the right surrogate for you, and you won't be the right parent, the intended parents for me. You know, you really have to make sure you're working with somebody who does understand you and that, you know, you do understand them, or you're going to be in the corner crying, and it's going to be a miserable process for everybody.
Which sounds horrible.
Yeah, it would be horrible.
So what other kind of thoughts or what other things you're kind of walking through this moment in your time come to mind?
Just joy and happiness. And the fact that I was able to do this for somebody was amazing. And, you know, I just feel like I've left my mark on the world for better. I've done something for somebody else to make their lives better.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, Amanda, I would like to end this and say thank you for sharing. Thank you for being vulnerable. And thank you for opening up and, you know, sharing your piece and your perspective on such a beautiful process.
Thank you. Glad I was able to do it.
And this, ladies and gentlemen, has been another Moment in Time.